You're listening to Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. If you hop on the freeway and drive east to the Inland Empire around Chino or Ontario, you'll begin to see warehouses.
When I came by before, the caissons were probably in place, but this is the beginning of up above the ground. This is the first couple of floors. As you can see, it's gone up pretty quickly, but this is not a tilt-up warehouse. This particular fulfillment center, it's built to a totally different standard.
There are hundreds of warehouses, big, nondescript. Usually they're lined with cargo bays for semis. They span from the meetings of the 15, 10, and 60 freeways all the way east through San Bernardino and now practically to the edge of the desert here in Beaumont. Nancy Carroll is on the Beaumont City Council. She has helped navigate the town's rapid growth in recent years, and she was among the leaders who landed a big development for that town of 48,000 people. Now, Beaumont is going to be home to Amazon's 14th fulfillment center in Southern California. And she says it's not your grandparents' warehouse.
There is no special deal that we cut for Amazon, and yet we have probably been able to land Amazon's most technologically advanced facility in the United States.
Gone are the people whose job it was to run across those huge warehouse floors, picking up items. In this top-of-the-line air-conditioned facility, the 1,000 or so workers per shift will mostly be in office jobs. Robots will be grabbing your purchases off the shelf.
Most of the servicing in the facility is going to be done by robots, and they run around the facility like electronic skateboards. There are no forklifts. People are not walking around with belts on because they might be lifting heavy weight things and whatever, and they're not taking long walks to break rooms. This is an entirely different concept.
If Amazon is introducing robots to get your stuff to Santa Monica or San Bernardino in the same day, you'd better believe others with a stake in logistics will take note. That industry, called goods movement, is the backbone of Southern California's Inland Empire. And with the threat of automation looming, what's going to happen to the sector that's been the IE's economic engine for more than 20 years? KCRW's Matt Gillum takes a look.
The Inland Empire is a historically blue-collar region, and many cities here have bet big on warehouses.
The Inland Empire has led the nation in job growth, and that's very much due to the growth of fulfillment and the logistics sector. It's our number one job creator, not only in the logistics jobs, but also in the construction jobs that come with it.
This is Paul Granillo. He's the head of the Inland Empire Economic Partnership, a regional nonprofit business advocacy group. Like many, Granillo has concerns about what automation could do to the livelihoods of thousands in the Inland Empire. He says technology has started to outpace people.
Fulfillment center came online and tripled the output, okay? Tripled the output of what the facility was able to do. Now, it didn't triple the workforce. It doubled the workforce. So there you start to see what automation can do.
That's more than a little concerning. The jobs warehouses and logistics provide are almost tailor-made for the workforce in the Inland Empire, where almost half of all adults have no higher education, says economist and consultant John Husing.
These are jobs that blue-collar people that are not well-educated can learn to do in a hurry. They can go in at an entry-level job with no background at all and then work their way up the chain of command inside these facilities.
Husing has been studying the Inland Empire economy for more than half a century. He can sum up what logistics has done for the area pretty succinctly.
That's what this sector has grown for us. Access to middle-class jobs for poor people.
People have got to stop telling their young people that they're worthless unless they're a lawyer or a doctor. Some of these manufacturing jobs pay very well, but you can't expect to make top dollar when you don't have any skills. Look, I know that a lot of people are not happy with this industry. I get it. But what's your alternative? Nobody ever comes and talks about the solution.
On the day I meet Fontana Mayor Aquanetta Warren, she's sitting in her office finalizing plans to go to a mayor's conference that will take her to Burning Man. Warren believes wholeheartedly warehouses have helped her city.
You know, people call me Warehouse Warren and they try to use that against me. They even try to recall me because I believe in making sure our residents have jobs. I'm not kidding you. That's don't let me go there.
The big industry isn't without its detractors. Environmentalists don't like them. But almost nobody is complaining about same-day shipping.
We're the truck capital of Southern California. Everything that comes off the port ends up in Fontana, gets repackaged, and gets sent all through the United States. When people complain about warehousing and distribution, I always say, well, stop ordering stuff. As long as you're going to order, there's a market for it. And then they look at me, what do you mean? I said, all the orders start here, folks. Yeah, that's why your stuff comes by noon.
The speed of Amazon's growth in the Inland Empire can't be understated. In less than a decade, they've gone from not having a presence in the area to being the region's largest private employer. They've saturated the IE's economy with $6 billion of investments. Warren is well aware the workforce of the Inland Empire has yet to draw companies like Johnson & Johnson or Google. So, for the time being, totally owning it, Warehouse Warren is fine with logistics, especially Amazon.
If you talk to those employees, they're happy. They got a job, but they are looking to do better. And if they can get the skills from Amazon to do that, let's let them do it.
When Warren says get the skills from Amazon, she means that literally. Even as the company invests in robots, Amazon also announced this summer it was going to spend $700 million to retrain a full third of its workers nationwide by 2025. Amazon says it's aiming to boost skills within the company and advance employees in-house or send them elsewhere at a higher level.
Now, when they said elsewhere, I think what they're looking at is they are only going to be strong in that people that work for them can achieve better. That's what I get from that. And that might mean going to other industries or setting up their own. We all know most of the jobs come from small businesses. Those people that they uplift probably are going to go out on their own.
Amazon's huge retraining announcement comes at a time when it's not a question of if automation will disrupt the logistics sector, but when and by how much. It's a hot and breezy September day when I meet University of Redlands professor Johannes Munoz at a coffee shop. The economist says automation will shake up the region and its backbone industry in a big way.
Amazon has been one of the most avid proponents of automation in their warehouses. They grew the use of robots on an annual basis from their beginnings of more than 200% per year. And so the next round, of course, what Amazon foresees is that the increased use of automation will allow them to put workers into different kind of uses, to put it in a mild manner.
In other words, the robots are coming. Munoz has gotten a lot of attention for a study he and his colleagues did looking at what share of jobs could technically be automated.
And we found that the Inland Empire is one of the regions that are most susceptible to automation in the whole nation. It's 63% of all jobs, I think, that can be automated by 2035. Of course, that's just the technical automation potential. That doesn't mean that this is actually going to happen at such a sharp pace.
What are some of the most impacted jobs and how many of them are here? I mean, we are a logistics hub and it seems like a lot of those jobs are in that field, that industry, which so many of our towns here have sort of gone all in on.
Front and center come truck drivers, specifically long distance truck drivers, and warehouse workers. These are just two huge groups here.
Munoz says about 75% of logistics jobs face automation. You heard that right. 3/4 of logistics jobs could be outsourced to robots. That presents a tremendous risk for the area, and he fears the Inland Empire could be one of the first places to feel automation squeeze. Munoz thinks the Amazon retraining effort can allay some of the future job losses.
That Amazon spends money on retraining workers, first of all, is uniformly good. Because regardless of whether they stay within Amazon or go elsewhere, they will have additional skill sets that make them more employable. But some of the workers, they will just not need anymore, even if they grow at the pace that they've grown historically. So these workers will have to find new opportunities, and that Amazon at least trains them before they are going to be set free. That is a good thing.
Then Munoz, who doesn't come across as a doom and gloom kind of guy, gets deadly serious before leaving the coffee shop patio.
Every truck driver who's sitting on a truck right now listening to this program, think about what is the next skill that you need to learn, because your job will be at stake in the next 5 to 10 years. And so better prepare now when you still have the money, the capacity, and the opportunity. If you're starting once you're on the dole, that's just going to be very, very hard, because you'll be on the dole with a lot of other people at the same time.
As Amazon braces its workforce for a future where robots play a larger role, the Inland Empire is faced with a choice: retrain or be left behind. For KCRW, I'm Matt Gillum.
Well, speaking of jobs, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a big new bill into law yesterday that will reclassify many of them. Assembly Bill 5 will turn a slew of gig economy workers into employees when it takes effect January 1st of next year. Now, under the new law, those workers would be eligible for protections that many employees get: health care, sick days, paid time off. But a lot of companies say they're not going to be able to hire as many people under this new law. Now, you might think it only applies to Uber or Lyft drivers, but it can be any freelance worker, really. Think real estate agents, accountants, reporters, graphic designers. It is a long list. Other workers who could see big changes as a result of the law are the folks who deliver food to your home, drivers for companies such as DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Postmates. Mona Holmes is a reporter over at Eater LA and a regular here on Crater LA. Hey, Mona.
Hello, Steve.
So we spoke with you a couple of months ago about problems that these food delivery workers were struggling with. We're talking about low wages, vanishing tips, which was a big one, strict time constraints. What do you think this new law is going to do to fix those problems?
So supporters of the bill say that contract worker designation erodes basic worker protections, from really long shifts, not taking a break, barely getting a minimum wage. And so, and in the case with DoorDash, like we talked about a few weeks back, some didn't always receive all of their tips. And so if AB 5 were law, worker breaks or any of these complaints, or even DoorDash's former tipping policy, wouldn't have been an issue because it would have been covered by current labor laws.
This new law, as I mentioned, takes effect at the beginning of the year. What will employees at that point be eligible for?
Well, at present, these delivery drivers are unable to gather a minimum wage, competitive pay, workman's comp, a set amount of hours, or even access to health care. Now, the devil is in the details. So these companies are going to have to figure out how they're going to work to provide these types of benefits to their soon-to-be employees. And the drivers that I've spoken with feel like they've been treated as outsiders by restaurant delivery apps like DoorDash and Uber Eats and Postmates. And this legislation will also bring them into the company fold. But experts and the law's authors suggest that this new law will completely change the interaction between these delivery drivers and restaurant apps in 2020.
So when you say company fold, you mean this person would be a DoorDash employee?
Correct.
This would be somebody who with the benefits or with those things that go along with that.
Correct. And so this is going to change not just with the drivers, but within the company. You know, the culture is impacted by this law greatly.
And when we talk about benefits, I mean, full-time people obviously get health care benefits in the vast majority of companies in this country. But, you know, for a lot of folks who do this, who deliver for DoorDash or for Postmates or whatever it may be, they do it as a side gig, right?
They do. They do. And actually, these companies, including Uber and Lyft, who are also impacted by AB5, are saying that this law takes away that flexibility that their workers have come to appreciate, where they can log on whenever they need to, work the hours that they want. Many of the drivers that I've met have been parents that are working while their children are at school. And they suggest that with this new law, that complete flexibility for their drivers completely goes away.
You say the devil's in the details, but I mean, the good here is that workers will be protected. But then again, the people who use this service, who are sitting at home and they're like, all right, I want to do this or that, it's going to cost them more money to get these items to their homes.
It is. It's probably going to drive either the monthly fee where you can get unlimited delivery up, or they'll tack on a fee to individual deliveries that customers will receive. So that sushi delivery or that ramen delivery that you love so much that might cost $10 might be significantly more.
The profit model, that's what we're talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
To make sure that margin is acceptable. What about restaurants who are participating in this? They don't have to if they don't want to, right?
They don't. And actually, you might have noticed that they don't already. There are times when you might log on to your favorite restaurant delivery app and your restaurant is quote unquote unavailable. And that's because sometimes these companies cannot keep up with the order, with the volume that's coming in over these restaurant delivery apps. In fact, Some of them have even hired an extra person just to fulfill those orders for Postmates, Uber Eats, DoorDash. But one of the things that they mostly complain about when I've spoken to restaurant owners is the cost of using these apps. They're kind of angry that these companies will take as much as 30% out of a single order just to fulfill it, and cuts into their profit margins as well on an already very competitive and very difficult business.
Well, as I said, this law takes effect in January, the beginning of the year. Are we anticipating any backlash? Do you think there will be lawsuits?
Well, last week, San Diego's city attorney filed a lawsuit alleging that certain gig economy workers had classified workers as independent contractors to avoid paying overtime and to avoid paying unemployment insurance, paying breaks. I think we're going to see a few more things just like that. But it's going to be really interesting to see how that goes, because Uber's counsel went on record saying on a blog post that they didn't feel like the new law would apply to them.
Wow. So, and I'm sure there are other companies that feel the same way.
We're going to have to see.
We're going to have to see, certainly. Mona Holmes, editor over at Eater LA and a contributor right here. Mona, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Mark Knopfler for your midday. We're in the last stretch, by the way, of KCRW's UnDrive Pledge Drive, revolutionizing the way we raise money. No interruptions to the programming. You get what you always get. And we only ask you 30 seconds at a time to think about the value of what you get at KCRW. Quality journalism, cultural and music shows that make you happy or make you think. Prove that not interrupting your favorite programs work. Think about $20 a month, perhaps. That's less than 70 cents a day to fund a radio station that's been here for you for decades. And if you contribute right now, you're automatically going to be entered into a special sweepstakes where you can win an all-inclusive pass or passes to Wilco's Sky Blue Sky Festival along Mexico's Riviera Maya. It is so important. You're not here for the prizes. You're not here for the thank you gifts, which you can find, by the way, at kcrw.com/join. You're here because you value what this radio station is about. I hope you'll join. I hope you contribute. I hope you'll bump it up a little bit. Whatever you can do in the last throes of our UnDrive Pledge Drive. kcrw.com/join. Well, coming up, the NFL Stadium going up in Inglewood has a new name and a plan for its opening. An update just ahead on Greater LA. You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. Thanks for being here. I'm Steve Chiotakis. There is a gargantuan project going on in Inglewood that is set to change LA's sports world and kind of everything else in that neighborhood, too, for decades to come. A $5 billion, 70,000-seat stadium is more than two-thirds of the way done, and it now has a name, SoFi Stadium. SoFi stands for Social Finance Corporation, which is essentially a bank that offers loans and refinancing. Who knows how much they paid to get their name plastered on the behemoth structure? No one would say. It's estimated at hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of 20 years. But it is a name that you are going to hear over and over again during football season and even outside of it. Petros Papadakis, another Greek-American radio guy, co-hosts the Petros and Money Show on AM 570 LA Sports, and he's with us right now. Petros, Kalispera.
Yasure.
Yasure.
Thank you for having me, and it's a thrill to be on your show. And yes, they are building this stadium as we are speaking.
I certainly hope you'll reciprocate, Petros. Anyway, I will tell you, we've got this giant thing going on. Where were you when the name was announced? Like, were you like me when I thought, wait, what's it going to be called?
I heard it twice. I heard it when everybody kind of said this is what it's going to be, and then I heard it when it was the official word, and now the very first event is going to be a Taylor Swift concert that would be next July, so 2020, July 2020.
Is that an appropriate break-in, do you think, Taylor Swift?
I guess. It's a pretty corporate stadium. She's a pretty corporate artist. It seems that it would work pretty well. And this stadium, just like the Dallas Palace in in Texas, if you've ever been to Arlington and been in that thing. And I'm a guy who kind of, maybe it's because I'm a Greek like you, but I do like antiquated things and old stadiums. I grew up in the L.A. Coliseum, which is a World War I memorial stadium.
Right.
And there's a lot of those around the country. I just came from the one in Nebraska, which is a memorial stadium, World War I. The one in Illinois is also a World War I memorial. Same up at Berkeley. And those ones, you know, it's kind of tricky when you try to do naming rights on those. I think they did up at Cal. But I do have to say that thing in Texas is pretty darn impressive.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful stadium and really accommodating to everybody, from the TV companies that come in to put on the games to your average everyday fan. And then the one in Atlanta is supposed to be better than that. And this one, SoFi in Inglewood, is supposed to top them all. So it even has its own name for the Jumbotron.
Oh, it does. What is
it? The Oculus.
Okay.
It's a 110-yard Jumbotron.
Yeah,
that's going to keep us staring at it like the monolith.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Petros, if Stan Kroenke's paying billions for this place, this is just part of the business model, right, to recoup the money, these naming rights. How else do you think he's going to make money with this stadium? I mean, are we talking about he owns the Rams. He's going to lease the stadium to the Chargers, who are going to play there too, right?
Correct. They're going to have big concerts there, like the Rolling Stones, if they're still alive, Taylor Swift, whatever else, big giant shows, the Pac-12 championship. He's probably going to move between there and the Raiders stadium in Las Vegas. There'll be maybe a preseason event every year between college football teams. You know, maybe Clemson plays Oregon, you know, or something like that to start the season off, one of those kickoff classic type of games. So I don't think you'll have the monster trucks. They'll be a little highbrow for that. But
of course,
you'll have, you know, villas, condos, places for people to live. There'll probably be a gigantic mall. I think there'll be a production studio, like the NFL Network will probably move into the stadium there or into the facility near the stadium at a certain point. So really what they'll try to create is a LA Live type of vibe. And as a guy who grew up when I was in college, living in the downtown area on a few different occasions, I lived downtown in LA before they built Staples Center, believe it or not, when I was first at USC. And then when I was done playing football and I was doing media stuff, I lived on Olympic and Grand after they had built Staples Center, but before LA Live.
Yeah.
And this will be like, eventually it'll be like the LA Live model, with a stadium that's three or four times as big and about 1,000 times more modern.
The city of Inglewood has to pay for the infrastructure, right, though, to get people in and out of the stadium?
Yeah, I think, you know, it'll be interesting because everything, it's one thing to have something, if you're an Angeleno, you know. If something's downtown, we all have so many more options to escape. Right.
Yeah.
And if something is on the west side, that is not the case. And Inglewood is most definitely on the west side. And it reminds me of when the Lakers were great playing in the Forum. That was a nightmare coming in and out. And we were a much different city 20 years ago with the Lakers in the Forum. So they've got a lot to consider. Mayor Butts is the guy to call.
We've talked to him. We have certainly talked to him before about it.
I'm just a football analyst.
No. Because it's $5 billion out of Stan Kroenke's pocket, but he's getting a lot back out of it, and including those city infrastructure projects that go along with it that the city's going to have to pay for vis-a-vis the taxpayers.
Right, and what Kroenke will tell you is, you know, whatever, man, I'm building the stadium, because that's really what you need to get something like this in the city of Los Angeles. That's why this is happening so late in our lives. I mean, we've been talking about a new stadium for decades and decades. And it's been from everywhere, from Irwindale to Carson to downtown. You know, I mean, we've seen every blueprint in the history of the world.
Yeah, you remember Farmer's Field?
Yeah, of course I do.
That never.
Everybody thought Sam Farmer, the LA Times writer, was the guy behind it. This thing is happening because this man is a billionaire, and he's putting his own money into it. So he will shrug his shoulders at any infrastructure whining from the city of Inglewood. But I'm sure there's a great deal of red tape and bureaucracy to cut through. But it is happening.
Yeah.
And we'll be all over it when it does. We'll go out there and wear the hard hats and try not to get shot with streamers.
Ella Petros Papadakis, half of the Petros and Money Show on AM 570 LA Sports. Yasu Petros.
Yasu and Kalinikta.
Kalinikta. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care. That's it for today. Thank you for being with us today on the show. And next week, a refuge for the homeless. Gyms. But how much of a refuge? Next on KCRW, the bookworm reads Between the Lines. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for the ear. Have a great day.